Axiom, the tasty truth.
Hi there, ladies and germs. Welcome to I Like Your Style with Elder Bryson. We are here with Trevor of the Date Month Year from New Zealand. How's it going?
Kia ora, sir. Very well. How about your good self?
Same old shit, man. Just, you know, trying to get by. I know you guys have it, you know, like you guys figured out the whole COVID thing over there. We are totally clueless here in the States still. So
it certainly feels like we did get something going quite early, and we're quite lucky, I think.
Yeah. No, I'm fairly envious of how you guys have handled things, because it's just a roller coaster here where I live.
We're watching.
I bet. Tell us a little bit about the origins of Date Month Year. Y'all have been around for a while, right?
Yeah, that's right. What happened was it started with me deciding I work in music education, and decided initially that I was going to be teaching students about composing and all that sort of stuff, that I needed to get off my butt and do it. So it evolved from that, really, and then the whole thing gathered momentum. So I decided to keep going with the recording and the performing, and it's sort of snowballed from there, really. And we've evolved, like we're totally self-financed and no record labels or any of that palaver. And the whole thing is about writing the songs and performing them. And basically I do the production and the bulk of the writing myself. But there's obviously a team involved. But I could isolate myself as being some sort of prime mover, I guess.
right on. So there's you and how many other people? Obviously you're doing the bulk of the writing, but I see you've got a few people in the band.
Yeah, currently there's currently there's four of us. So Brooke Baker is singing lead, Hayley Schwass is doing the bass, and Tyler Leet is playing guitar. So just a four piece.
Fantastic. So you're an educator, so this might, you know, be a bit of a different one, but what does the phrase sex, drugs, and rock and roll mean to you?
What does it mean?
Yeah.
What do the Manic Street Preachers say? It's a design for life, isn't it?
Nailed it.
But for someone of my, shall we say, advancing years, one needs to pace oneself. That's certainly sure.
Yeah, for sure. As soon as I wasn't 20 anymore, I realized that my body's not my friend.
Yeah, it's just simple. It's just evolution, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. Nailed it. So on a scale of 1 to 10, how weird are you?
I would give myself probably about a 7.5. I think.
Okay. That's right. What's the weirdest thing you've ever done?
I'm New Zealand weird, which means we don't tend to be overtly outwardly weird, but we tend to just be sort of quietly weird, I guess is a better way of putting it.
Like secret covert weirdness?
Should we say restrained weirdness? Maybe that's a good way of putting it.
I can get behind that.
Yeah.
So what have you listened to lately that's been inspiring to you?
Oh my goodness. I listen to music constantly, and I mean constantly. It's part of the thing about being a music educator is that you need to listen stuff, and I would be doing an hour to an hour and a half of listening every day. And gosh, the people who are inspiring me at the moment, frankly, they tend to be females. So I'm thinking St. Vincent, Licky Lee, people along that line, they're just a bit different, and it's a stupid word, I don't mean different. They've got a really clear creative vision, and I really find what they do fascinating and worth listening to.
Yeah, you're spot on. I wish I'd gotten to see that tour that St. Vincent did with David Byrne, where totally missed the ball on that one. But
Yeah. It would have been something else for sure.
Yeah, right. Exactly. No, but I got to see her on her next tour without David Byrne, but then I got to see David Byrne the following. So it all worked out eventually, just, you know, not at the same time.
Is it? Is that the tour where the backing band had the masks on? Is that that one?
No, I don't. Maybe. I mean, I didn't see it, but okay. I saw some videos. I don't remember there being masks, but I could be wrong.
Okay. that caused a bit of consternation in New Zealand.
Right.
there's a band there who's been doing the whole mask routine for some time, and people saw San Vincent did it on one tour, and they got a bit annoyed about it. But, you know,
It works for some bands. I mean, the guys from Slipknot never saw them in public for like 15 years without their masks on, and until one day.
That's right.
Yeah, nobody knew what they looked like. It is what it is. So,
and I'm old enough to remember Kiss, who did the same thing, basically. So
I'm about it. What's been your biggest failure, and what did you learn from it?
Biggest failure? That's a really good question. I constantly fail and constantly learn from it. So it's got to do, okay, I think, I don't know if that was biggest, but I certainly, I overcooked an album once. I think our third one, I spent too much time going all Frank Zappa about it and a lot less time letting the sound evolve. And I think by and large, the entire collection was just overcooked. And that was a good lesson for me. I think there's about two songs left that I feel that I, you know, I'm happy with and I can still listen to, but the rest I just get angry at myself for, you know, just for just overdoing it. So I've learned then, you know, about the value of getting people, you've got to have people involved and you've got to give them the chance to put their flavor in things. And I've done that ever since and it's worked out to the good.
I love that you just use Frank Zappa as a verb. That's
yeah. Well, it is, isn't it? You go Frank Zappa and just start writing everything down, and it's like, oh, come on, worked for him, but it didn't work for me.
Yeah, right. And the thing is, at the time, it all is like, yeah, this is brilliant, you know. Like, and then you give it some time, you go back, and you're like, this is the busiest thing that's ever existed.
Yep. And you know, you can't have any regrets. You know, what do they say? No regrets. But you know, it's a learning thing, and it's really important that you do. And I bore myself quite quickly, so I really make sure that if anything happens, it's like, well, what, you know, what am I going to learn from this? And that's it's a key thing. So I got no worries with failing. I quite like it sometimes, in fact.
Same. Like, that's the biggest thing. You know, if you never fail, then you never tried.
Yeah. Well, I mean, looking at all your stuff, I can see, you know, there's a heap of the various different styles and covers you've done. You know, and that counts for a lot. You go through and look, and there's all these different experiments and different ways of trying things, and it's very cool.
Yeah, you just got to throw stuff at the wall, see what sticks, and then run in those directions for a little while to, you know, catch that wave, right?
I agree.
So, what you're as a music educator, I probably imagine you have some great answers for this one. What advice?
I'll try.
What advice do you give to aspiring musicians?
Oh, play the long game. Play the long game, especially nowadays. My goodness. People, so, you know, you've got to read your history and you realize people chasing the short-term gains, it's a waste of time. You've got to play the long game and you've got to be true to your own, I'm going to use the word vision, but for me it's the sounds that I hear in my head, and if they come out sounding like The Residents or Pink, then that's what happens. You know, you got to honor that voice. But I'd definitely be saying play the inner game, play the long game, sorry.
Yeah. No, that's absolutely brilliant because, you know, you got, I see so often everyone's going, trying to go viral, right, quote unquote. And then what do you do from there?
Yep. It's a big myth. You don't go viral. You know, you go viral at the encouragement of the same people who would make you famous 50 years ago. So it's, you got to be able to look back on what you do, I think, in 20 years' time and go, yep, that stands. That's what I did then, and that's, you know, that was honest to what I was doing. And as long as you can do that, I think that's okay.
Yeah, that's how you sleep at night.
Yeah, it is.
So who would you say that the three people, and they don't have to be music-related, but who have been the most influential to you have been over your career?
Ooh, once again, I could give you a million, but I can give you a selection. Robert Fripp from King Crimson is one of my all-time heroes for various reasons. Miles Davis is another one. I just love how he approached doing music, and well, both of them, how they just recruited the people they wanted, and then they changed and they developed, and I just love that. Igor Stravinsky is another one, just because of his vision. And believe it or not, Muhammad Ali. I grew up watching him on TV and here in New Zealand, and what, he's just an absolute legend to me. And how he stood for what he stood for, and how he stood for things. You know, I just admire the guy so much.
Now, he had some absolutely phenomenally witty quotes too, but people like at least here, people like to misquote him all the time and say stuff that he never said and put it on pictures and misattribute it to him. But and then you look it up like, Muhammad Ali never said that. But
no. It's the 21st century, isn't it?
Yeah.
I wish he said it, but
yeah. Or sometimes you're glad he didn't.
That too. Yeah, that's for sure.
So where would you say that your hub is online, where our listeners can best find you? Is it Instagram or?
For an old crusty white dude, I've actually got the socials down quite pat. So Instagram's a good place. Facebook's still a good place for us. YouTube's really good. And what have I missed? Oh, Twitter. And the thing with us is that if you follow us on all the various different platforms, the content's different.
Tailor your content to each platform to what works there.
Yep.
Wow.
Yep. I reckon it feels like I'm cheating if I don't, because people are going to spot to Twitter, for example, and we've got a certain audience there or a certain ecosystem there, and we converse in a certain way, and Instagram is completely different, and I love them both, but you know, it feels a bit stink if I'm just doing the same post. That's a New Zealand phrase, by the way. It feels a bit stink. It feels a bit stink if I'm just sharing the same post to the same, you know, on different platforms, because it just feels a little bit like cheating people to me.
Oh, yeah. No, you're absolutely right, because, you know, I haven't figured out Twitter yet, so I still just hit the share to Twitter button on there. But I try to do different stuff for the rest of my socials, right? But yeah, exactly. No, you're spot on. Cause yeah, sometimes it's like, well, why would I follow a band on Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and Instagram if it's all the same information? Right. So yeah,
that's exactly right. So if you just chuck the word date, month, year in the search engine, luckily it's one of those unique names, chuck it in the search bar over any of them and you'll find us quite quickly. And, at the risk of sounding like I'm plugging myself, do say hi and I'll say hi back.
Yeah, no, I figured that out pretty quickly. That's awesome.
That's how it works, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, 100%. That's how you build community, right? And that's what art's all about. So we're gonna go ahead and play your track Exodus off Spotify here real quick, if you don't mind. Give that a listen, then we'll circle back around. This is Exodus by Date, Month, Year.
Replay.
that was fun.
I was hearing some great sounds then.
Awesome. I'm a bass player originally at first, you know, so like when I hear like a bass line that like grooves and then someone that can transition to like something driving and then get back into like a nice riff style again, I absolutely love it. But
fun song. It was a lot of fun to write that song, that's for sure.
I bet. So what was the process of writing and recording that song? Like where'd you go? How'd you do it?
Well, this is one I actually did get a little Frank Zappary on, to be honest. The bass line is all written out, you know, like in Western style notation, did all that. And we're just lucky that we've got everybody in that month here reads music. So I can give that to Haley and she can just, you know, learn it and read it. And so that was fun. And so it evolved from that riff. And then I just built a lyrical story on top to do with the lyrics are all to do. It's basically an interpretation of the Lorax, Dr. Seuss. I just imagine the Onceler from the Lorax, if he was talking, if he was looking out on a ruined world, what would he say? And that's where all the lyrics came from. And then put the whole thing together, really. And I like the loud and the quiet, you know, so going from a sort of a down tempo or down dynamic verse into big choruses and a big finish.
Yeah.
And that's pretty much how it works, really.
Yeah, no, it's fantastic. There's not nearly enough Dr. Seuss-based music in my...
you did right. If you go, this sounds like an ad again, if you go and look up the video for it on YouTube, there's an extended intro. So it's about another 3 or 4 minutes long, and it's a stunningly bleak video of impending ecological destruction, which cheers me up no end. But people find it a bit oppressive to watch. But, you know, hey.
There's that reserved weirdness we were talking about earlier. I love it.
You got it. Absolutely.
Awesome. Well, we'll throw a link to that video in the description for this show. Yep. But so, and as far as the recording process, so the writing process, you write it all out, all your bandmates can read, which is incredible in this day and age, especially guitarists.
Well, it's quick. Believe it or not, it's quicker.
Yeah.
I find, you know, and I should point out, it's not all written up. That's the bit I learned from the last album. So while the bass line was written out and the melody line I did notate, the guitars and the drums did evolve. It's, you know, so it's a combination there.
Yeah, you throw out some lead sheets and see what happens. That's
absolutely, that makes sense.
And then, so do you guys have your own studio where you record? Is it, you know, is there a garage somewhere? Do you guys take it to a studio somewhere? Who's you're doing the production yourself, right?
Well, there's a commercial studio in Hamilton. I live in Hamilton, New Zealand. There's a commercial, and that's where we went and did it. And it was recorded and engineered and mixed by a wonderful guy called Scott Newth, who works with, you know, people like the Datsuns, and he's got a really good, you know, ear and a really good production sensibility. And he kept insisting that I was being the one producing it, and I felt that because he was doing the bulk of the work engineering wise, he was doing it. But I think what it came down to is I guess I was being a bit George Martin, you know, when it came to it, because I love the charts and make all the decisions. So he sort of felt that put me in the production role, which is, I guess, fair enough.
Yeah, that makes sense. So what was the moment that you knew that you wanted to be a musician?
Oh, the time I tried to stop. Because I've tried twice. No, I beg your pardon, in my life, I've tried stopping being a musician 3 times and I just become utterly unbearable to be around. So I just have to reconcile myself to the fact that's what I want to do. Essentially what that means is I hear songs in my head, I hear music in my head constantly. And essentially with the songs, they will not leave me alone until they're out. And they just won't. And so I quit once when I was about 19, because, you know, I was 19. And then I thought I was going to quit again in my 20s, and that didn't work out. And then I quit again in 2008. And I think that lasted about 4 weeks. And it was just like, nope. You know, so it's very much like I don't have much of a choice, I feel.
Yeah, no, you're spot on. There have been times in my life, you know, just, you know, a workaholic for about a decade and not in music. Mm. And so I just wouldn't have the time, and it just made me miserable, right? I'd just be angry drunk all the time because I wasn't doing what I was supposed to be doing. And so I can, I can totally relate to that.
And I mean, I'm lucky. I've got my family are fantastic, so they just know that's what I do, and they pretty much give me all the space I need to get on and do it. And I don't get too outrageous, so you know the balance works out.
Yeah, no, that's required, you know, because you know when musicians do get too outrageous, it's usually tragic, and so it's important to find that, you know, and have that family support and that kind of thing.
And it's a little bit boring, to be honest. In this day and age, musicians doing the whole, you know, passing out on the couch thing or throwing up on stage. It's like, yeah, that's, you know, Gigi Allen did that in the 70s, man. You know, can we, you know what I mean? It's a little bit boring.
Yeah, no, let's move on, especially when you have all these artists now that are doing everything, like, you know, your Mac DeMarcos, your Kevin Parkers, you know, all these cats that literally have, you know, who has time to pass out on the couch when you have creative control over, you know, these musical empires, if for lack of a better word.
And I look at a guy like, take Childish Gambino, you know, he works his butt off.
Oh yeah,
and I just think that's cool, man. That's the kind of, you know, I'm not saying he's a Puritan or anything, but he's just the guy gets the work done, and that's what I admire in music: people who get out and get the stuff done. You know.
Oh yeah, if that guy doesn't EGOT, I will be shocked and amazed. But yeah, it's been interesting watching, because I've been a fan of his since, you know, the early days, and so it's been really interesting watching his career really like kind of go in so many different directions.
Yeah,
it's awesome. Just, and yeah, so yeah, and in the with the razor thin margins of streaming, you know, there's just no there's no time for that kind of excess. I love it.
I don't think so. Yeah.
What's your favorite curse word?
Can I curse on this podcast? Am I allowed to?
Abso-fucking-lutely.
Okay, so it's probably going to be fuck. We were talking about this today, and I think it's fuck because you can use it in so many different linguistic contexts, and it still works. You know, like it's a verb, it's an adverb, it's a noun, it's, you know, all sorts of things. Plus, it's got the added thing, it's got a soft consonant and then a hard consonant at the end, and you can also extend the vowel. So it's. You know, I'm sure you've seen some kind of monster, you know, when Lars is screaming, fuck.
Yeah.
You know, he's pushing the word to the extremes of its limit. And it's just, yeah, it's one of those words, I think. It's just, you can use it in all sorts of places.
You absolutely can. You can use it as every word of a sentence if you really want to. But yeah, I love that you brought up some kind of monster. My favorite scene in any music documentary ever is when Kirk just kind of face palms. Right, and he's just so fed
Come
up
on,
with the rest
guys.
Of the
yeah, yeah.
It's so good.
I found a deleted scene somewhere on YouTube, and I haven't been able to find it since. But Bob Rock is sitting in a chair, and he rolls over Lars Ulrich's foot, and Lars just blows his lollies. It's so funny.
He's so angry.
But I've got no problem with the chap. People criticize him a lot. I know, but it doesn't bother me in the slightest. He is what he is.
Right. You can't change who you are.
Well, and I've watched, there's a series where he's interviewing people on a radio show, and I've seen it. He's like interviewing people like Noel Gallagher, and that's really, really good. As in, he's really insightful with his questions, and you know, I'm thinking, man, that's cool, man.
Yeah, no, he's brilliant. Like it's there's a reason he's kind of always been not really the face of Metallica, but kind of, you know, he's well spoken. Yeah, yeah. He knows what he's talking about. He knows what he's doing. I always
think of him when I think of Metallica. He's the guy I think of.
Yeah, absolutely. He just, you know, be a little brash sometimes, but you know, whatever. Nobody's perfect.
What the hell?
Right. All right. Nerd time. What's your favorite piece of gear?
Recording gear or drumming gear or
any,
give me a little.
Yeah, nope.
My favorite piece of gear is it's a Korg X5D keyboard. and I'm not quite sure how old it is. I think it could be 7,000 or 8,000 years old. And I picked it up from a school many years ago, and it's a really old school keyboard, and it's a programmable synth. And the instruction manual is about 300 pages. It's huge. And you have to work for about an hour just to get a sound out of it. And I just love it to bits. It just comes up with the weirdest sounds. And if you chuck anything through it, a distortion pedal or a looping pedal and stuff, it's just hours of fun. So, yeah, a Korg XD. X5D, sorry.
That sounds like fun. And it reminds me, there was this one interview Jack White, I think, did, where he talks about his favorite guitars to play are the hardest ones to play, the ones with the super high action that you've got to fight for every note, because then you really feel it, right? Yeah. And I love that about any piece of old shitty gear that I have to, you know, like, solder just to get to work.
Yeah. Maybe it's a metaphor for me, and I'm probably an old shitty piece of gear myself that is hard to motivate, but you know, hard to tell.
It's our subconscious does weird things.
It does. True that, man.
All right. So you guys, you know, you've taken off, you know, you've written that international super hit album. You're on the plane doing your world tour. You've got your record collection with you on the plane for some reason. And, plane's going down. You got just enough time to grab three records to play in your coconut powered radio on the desert island you're going to be stuck on for the next 5 years. What three albums are you grabbing?
Okay. I would've got David Bowie's Heroes, if I can listen to the whole album. I would grab Brian Eno's Before and After Science. No, I wouldn't. It would be Another Green World. That's the one I grab. And I would think I'd either go for a King Crimson album from the 70s, I might go for Red, or I would go for Duckstab by the Residents.
I like your style. Yeah, that's you're not going to be bored. You're going to be bored, but not going to be as bored.
Being bored is a cardinal sin for me, so yeah.
So we talked about the Lorax earlier, but what do you typically like to write about lyrically? You've got quite a body of work here.
Lyrically, I write about lots of stuff as long as it's not me. I find writing about personal inner turmoil and inner landscapes boring once again. So I tend to go for stories. So with Exodus, for example, I talked about, the Lorax. And I wrote another song on the album that I was talking about before that I overcooked, and the song's called Down, where I thought I'd have a look at depression and what that felt like. Or what that looked like, more to the point. And then other songs, I tend to make stories. So we did a song on the latest album, it's called July, and July is an evil pop star that I invented, and what that sort of person would do and what they'd think and what they'd say. And another one is about a song called Flowers, which I wrote about. So it's a New Zealand phenomenon we used to do in the 80s and 90s, and it was called doing your overseas experience. You'd leave and you'd fly mostly to England and spend 2 years working there. And the idea of flowers was that we were flowers of the empire. So that's a central metaphor there. I love that. I read books all the time, so I've got a real literary bent. And I just listen to lyricists, you know, like Bowie's an obvious example, or Nick Cave or Tom Waits and these guys with this storytelling, and it really resonates with me.
That's awesome. I love the idea of the evil pop star named July. That's just fun.
And that's the other part. It is fun, and you know, you can take on these things and make these stories up, and it doesn't necessarily have to be any sort of objective truth or about feelings or whatever. It's just painting a picture or telling a story, you know, and that's great.
Oh yeah, 100%. I've been, my songwriting's lived in the inner turmoil land for a long time, and I've been trying to branch out from that, because sometimes, you know, I'll be working on something that'll just make me really mad at my dad. And
so, well, there you go. I mean, I'm not. I should be. I'm not trying to criticize that as an approach, because it works for plenty of people. I think the thing is with me is my inner landscape, I just don't think is that interesting.
Oh, no, it works. The issue is that, some of these things that I would write about, they're not a thing for me anymore, right? So it's just, now what? Yeah. You know, it's like when your favorite songwriters that have written all these really great songs about heartbreak forever, they get married and they find happiness, right? And it's like, what yeah. now?
Yeah. You know?
And exactly. One of my favorite ones of those. He you know, started off in something corporate and just wrote all these sad emo songs, right? Now he, you know, writes solo music because he can't do that old stuff anymore because it's not who he is anymore.
That's right. And I followed a guy called Billy Bragg from England.
Yep.
And he started out as a really, really angry punk, and he wrote songs like, oh gosh, the Home Front, I think, which is on his third album, which I think is the most, it's one of the greatest songs of all time. It's a real tearjerker, but he's looking at his own society and the people in it, and it moves me to tears because I'm an old sook. Moves me to tears every single time, and it's got nothing to do with him. It's him looking out at the world and expressing a sort of despair. And that's just me. And I love that sort of stuff.
Yeah, no, Billy Bragg's brilliant.
Yeah, he is.
So, what drives you as a musician?
What drives me is that, well, as I mentioned before, I hear songs in my head. And that's an important thing, and they won't leave me alone until they're done. And there's dozens of them, so I have to work to get them done. I love drumming; I just love it. So I even a crusty old dude like me, I practice at minimum half hour to an hour a day every day. It's not because it's a chore; it's because I actually love it. I'm normally at my calmest and happiest when I'm doing music, when I'm playing it. I teach music, so I'm just immersed in it all the time, and I love that too. So it's not, I guess I feel a little bit driven by music, but I love it, and I just wouldn't stop. I envisage myself, I'm one of these people who, if something would happen, I'd just work out the way to keep playing music. You know, if it meant me banging a rubbish bin lid and whistling, well, that's probably what I'd end up doing.
No, I was living in a cave in the middle of Thailand for about a year, and all I had access to was this old beat up acoustic guitar and a really, really beat up audio interface. And I made a whole album with just that, you know?
Yeah. And I can remember the first time I went to the States. I remember I was in Boston, and we were walking past this bunch of kids, and they were doing the old drumming on the buckets.
Yep.
And God damn, it was good. I mean, and I was remember looking at, because these kids were plainly not what you'd call rich. And they had this thing, and I remember thinking then, God damn, if all they have is a bucket, then I've got no excuse not to be making music, you know?
Shit, that's deep. Yeah. I mean, and then you see have you ever seen these guys now? They've got the different lengths of pipe so they can create melodies with their drumming. Oh, it's so good.
It's amazing. It's amazing, you know, and it's music. Robert Fripp always talks about, he you know, this is going to get really deep, but he talks about music actually plays the musician rather than the other way around. And I think if you hear it and you do it, then it'll come out any old way, you know. Oh, 100%. And I just love that.
Yeah. No, you're spot on. So this is my favorite segment of the show. It's hot takes with Elder Bryson. What's your unpopular opinion that you know is true? What hill will you die on, defending this point till you're blue in the face that, you know, not everybody agrees with?
Young people are not as dumb or as ignorant as they're made out to be.
Wow. There you go.
Yeah, it grinds my gears. I work in education, so I see young people all the time. And the big myth about young people is, you know, they're stupid or they're slaves to their devices. And as far as I'm concerned, that's just bollocks. And I tend to listen to young people a lot more than people. I don't know if you're actually recording me visually, but I'm an old white guy, and my God, we're boring. You know, and so I tend to listen to the kids more, and they get written off a lot, and that really, you know, drives me crazy. So I always tend to defend the kids, basically.
Yeah. No, thank you for that, because there's not enough people who do. And I see so many kids whose dreams get, and myself when I was young included, you know, so many kids' dreams just get shattered because, you know, well, you're young, you don't know what you're talking about, you know.
Yeah.
How would you learn otherwise other than trying new things, you know? I mean, other than something stupid and dangerous, right? But yeah, and this is an audio podcast. There's no visual element, but just for the listeners at home, we do have old white guy with a nice graying beard happening, some headphones on, and a killer blue shirt in front of us. So
yeah, people like this shirt.
It's a solid choice. You should. I wish I had one like it.
Hey, well, coming from someone from California, man, that's a compliment. So thank you.
I've lived all over though. I'm currently in California, but I've lived in Southern California, Northern California, Thailand, Utah, some other places.
It's, oh wow!
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
It's been all over the place. So one of the most beautiful places. People don't you know give enough credit because it's full of you know religious fanatics. But the deserts of Utah are one of the most stunningly beautiful places you've ever been to.
Oh yeah. I've been there and I concur. I it's fantastic. Absolutely agree with you.
So, what is a common misconception you feel like people see about being a musician? Like when you tell people, "Oh yeah, I'm a composer. Like I'm a musician." What do you think they think that's just flat out wrong?
Oh, the one we hear all the time is, "Yeah, what do you do for your real job?" That's a real New Zealand thing. Oh, that's a nice hobby. You do music. That's kind of cute, you know. we get that a lot. Not so much now. I did when I was growing up, because there's a slightly funny culture here, or it was a slightly funny culture here about that sort of thing, you know. But very much, yeah. What's your real job? Or actually, the other one I get is, aren't you a little bit old for that? That's another one.
Oh man, if you're too old, then we got to talk to Mick Jagger.
Well, yeah, I mean, and invariably the people, like as I say, that's not kids who tell you that. Young people don't give a damn.
No,
it's normally people who will say you're a bit old for that, and then they'll go home and start listening to the Rolling Stones, and you go, well, you know, how does that work out?
Right. Yeah. No, I got to, there was this concert a few years back here in California called Old Chella. It's one of my favorite experiences. Yep. It was Bob Dylan, The Who, Neil Young, yep. Paul McCartney, Roger Waters, yep. and the Rolling Stones. And just a killer weekend of music. Each of them played for 3 hours plus.
Neil Young collective age, about 3,000.
Yeah. exactly.
Neil Young came and played in Auckland, New Zealand. Must have been about 4 years back, and it was a stadium show. And honest to God, he just wiped the floor with everybody.
Oh, it's a monster.
Yeah. Yep. He did about 12-minute Cortez the Killer, and we were just lying back against the back of the wall, you know, going, wow, there's that much power and that much, you know, I don't know, that much magic, I guess.
Oh, yeah. And that's just a powerful song to begin with. Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy because you know, like I'm rolling in my mid-30s, right? You know, and what do you do? Well, my job is a musician, but you know, for extra money, I do live sound and lighting for concerts. So it's still right adjacent, right? But you know, there's none of that right now either here.
But, I used to shut people up. They used to say, "What do you do for your real job?" And I used to say, "Oh, I club seals," and that just you know. It's just a conversation killer, so I didn't tend to get asked too much after that.
Oh, that's great. I used to have this shirt. It was like a bunch of little seal, you know, baby seals, and there's a disco ball, and it said, "Stop clubbing baby seals."
For the record, ladies and gentlemen, I don't club seals, but yeah, that was just something.
I don't think anyone was confused about that.
Oh, good.
Crystal clear, none of us are advocating for the clubbing of baby seals. Nobody has time for that. So what are you hoping to accomplish in the next few years?
Well, it's a terrific question. The last album we did, that Mathir album, was a massive learning curve for me about how you do things in this modern world, you know, music, releasing music. So it's just pretty much finished its cycle of release and promo now. And what I've done is there's a whole lot of leftover audio from the album, which I have made into a little, what I've called a suite of songs. And that's really, really out there and weird music. And I'm currently releasing one of those with a really strange and challenging sort of video at the same time. I'm doing one of those a month. And what I'm doing is I've learned a great deal about how you do your promo in the modern era, you know, how you use your Facebook ads, how you use your Spotify and YouTube and all that sort of stuff. And so we're building momentum. And so those songs are coming out right now. All those pieces are coming out right now. They're the Exodus suite. And we've got a whole lot of gigs planned without wanting to sound, yay, we've got gigs and not gloating or anything, but we can do that in New Zealand now. So we've got a whole lot of gigs planned next year. And then on top of that, we've got two new singles planned. That'll be singles. That'll be full-on vocal songs that I'm aiming for February, March next year. So is it the world domination push? I doubt it, but certainly we're building momentum right now, and we're moving into those two songs and the gigs and stuff next year. So it's all about moving forward at the moment, and it's too much fun. I've got to be honest with you.
Yeah, no, I'm excited for it. I'm never, just because things suck for me and I can't play shows doesn't mean I'm ever going to not be excited for you that you can play shows.
So yeah, we're lucky. It worked. Well, no, we're not lucky. It's actually not right. It was planned.
Yeah.
The people in charge here did, you know, I know there's lots of argument about it, but people in charge here did a pretty good job, and they shut the place down when they needed to. And then because they did, we can now go and plan, you know, live gigs again and live shows, and it's sort of worked out well for us. So I wouldn't be one to gloat, but you know, the way it was done here it's been really quite good for people like me.
Yeah, I'm happy for you. I can't plan dinner next week, so you know that's
yeah. The world's watching, man, and I'll tell you, my heart is going out, because I've got a lot of friends in various different places in the States, and you know, my heart goes out to you. It really does. I wish there's more I could do, mainly because most of the audience and the music loving people in the States, they're just a tremendous audience. I mean, they're just so eclectic and so, you know, so accepting, you know. So I feel really sad about the fact that, you know, everything's sort of locked down and difficult for you.
Yeah, it is what it is, you know. It's not, you know, I mean, there's nothing I can personally do about it except my part to be responsible, right? So,
yep. Well, you can always talk to me. You can always talk to me, man. I'm always here.
Sweet. I appreciate that. So speaking of shows, what's the best show you have ever played?
Ever played? The next one. Sorry, that's my standard answer. We've done a lot of shows. The last show we did in New Zealand was July the 4th, and we just cemented our new lineup, and gosh, it was good. That was really good. And then we've also we just did an acoustic set, which we've recorded live and has just come out on YouTube right now. And we didn't spend hours and hours rehearsing the acoustic set. We just did it. That's not quite right. We spent a bit of time rehearsing it, but certainly it wasn't what you'd call going in, you know, over rehearsed. And each piece was just a delight to play. It really was. It's one of those moments where you just sit there and just go, it's all just, you know, it's all just right. So yeah, the last few shows we did have been our best, I believe.
Nice. Okay. Well, that's beautiful. And I'll have to check. You've got a lot on YouTube that I need to go discover, because I've only perused your Spotify so far. So, my next question you've already answered. What would it take you to quit making music? And obviously the answer for that is you've tried and failed at that several times.
Yeah. It would have to be something pretty serious, I think.
Yeah. So if you could step into my shoes, what would you ask yourself that I didn't?
What would I ask me? Where did you get that shirt? No, I know what, yes, I'd be asking. Possibly is how could someone living in, say, New Zealand develop such an eclectic taste? of listening to music?
And the answer to that, because I have a feeling I know, but go for it.
Well, we're kind of blessed in my generation because we grew up in the people who used to curate the playlists, if you like. There was a TV program that I grew up with called Radio with Pictures, and it was on at 9 o'clock on every Sunday night. And the people who did it. They were considered very, you know, weird and strange, but they'd go through and every week they'd collate a show of utterly, you know, it could be The Residents, followed by Patti Smith, followed by The Who. And every week it was something different. Every week it was something different. And I just soaked it up. And I used to feel so jealous of people living in the States and England and Germany, because you could go down the road and hear this range of stuff, and I couldn't. So it was something I really developed a taste for very young, is just going and listening to all this amazing stuff. And some of it took a long time. Like I keep going on about The Residents. They terrified the hell out of me when I was a kid. You know, the video for Hello Skinny is just, I used to have nightmares, but I've always gone back and watched it again and again, and I just love it. It stuck with me. So I'm really grateful for the music that's come out of places like the States and England and Germany, to be fair, and Africa, for example. And you know, there's a lot of stuff that's come, and I'm very grateful for that.
Yeah, no, me too. I'm absolutely grateful for, there's been so much music that's you know, quote unquote, saved me from myself over the years, that's come from all over the world. And I without, you know, the magic of, you know, I mean, I'm lucky to have lived most of my life in California, where, you know, tastes are fairly diverse, but, you know, they're becoming less that way lately, it feels. that's a different story. Yeah, it's really exciting to be in with the new internet culture and the ability to connect with, you know, your people.
Absolutely, and I really gravitate towards that. I really do. I'm a big fan of YouTube. A big fan of, well, I can't honestly say I'm a big fan of Spotify, but I can go and find everything that I missed, and I do love that. I got to say, being able to go and listen to this stuff. There might be a Kinks album that I didn't listen to in the 70s, and I go, right, I can find that now.
Yeah.
And I am grateful for that, much as I'm not getting any money out of Spotify, but I am grateful for being able to do that, you know.
Yeah, Spotify is a great frenemy, but the beautiful thing is that, you know, you own your masters, and, you know, you know, as you continue to grow, and as I'm sure people start to like your music more and more, from what I've heard so far, the more you keep doing what you're doing and building and fostering a community of, you know, people who love music like you do, it's, you know, I mean, Spotify can pay okay. You know, I know that Will Toledo, before he started Car Seat Headrest, was paying his rent with his Spotify money. From his, he would just upload an acoustic song he wrote like once a week, and he had so much music on there that it would, you know, generate some revenue.
Yep, so it's doable. And again, we're looking at format. So the stuff we release from now on Spotify will be different from stuff we release elsewhere.
Yeah.
So if you hear us on Spotify, it's going to be a Spotify date month here, as opposed to a YouTube one, or as opposed to a live one, and that's legit. I think that's fair.
Yeah, that's totally fair, and I'm excited to see what y'all are doing, because it seems like you're doing the right things for the right reasons. Any final words for our audience?
I'd like to say thanks for having me. Basically, I'm finding myself doing quite a few of these interviews and talking to people like your good self, and I just love it. I really do. It's like, words fail me a little bit. I just really appreciate the fact that I can go and be talking to the other side of the world like this, and people are listening and people are into it, and I just love that. So thank you.
Yeah, we live in a beautiful world, and thank you so much for joining us. Ladies and gentlemen, this has been I Like Your Style. Thank you and good evening.